My responsibility is to make this place great again.
This is not the 1980s OSU.
Remember, always have faith in God, but have faith in yourself, and certainly have faith in the Cowboys.
Let her rip!
We are back at it. Welcome back to another edition of the Pistols Firing Podcast. I'm Carson Cunningham, joined as always by Colby Powell. Colby, it's been a while. I got to apologize to our loyal listeners. We've had a lot going on. You were a bit under the weather this week as well, so we've kind of had to keep delaying. But I think it's a good thing because now we kind of have baseball and softball postseason wrapped up going into national play for baseball. And, of course, softball season's over. But how you doing on this weekend? Gorgeous weekend. School's out of session, so it's officially summertime. How you doing?
Great. Yeah, we were going to record midweek, and then I lost my voice and couldn't talk and had a sore throat and the works. So doing much better and having a great weekend. My daughter and I went to the zoo yesterday, and she's now four. She's just old enough that on the weekends we started to skip naps. So we stuck around into the afternoon. We watched the elephant show for the first time, which she thought was just about the greatest thing of all time. And yeah, we were at the zoo for like 7 hours yesterday. So it was a fun little daddy-daughter day, and now she's sleeping over at Gigi and Pappy's tonight, so we're going to have the house to ourselves. It's I don't know what we're going to do without kiddo and bedtime routine.
You're going to thunder the hell up is what you're going to do, by golly. I mean, we don't have kids either. They're away this next week, so we're going to be thundering it up tonight. I assume you'll be doing the same.
Oh, I can't wait. Yeah, we're going to be dialed in, and multiple TVs. We'll have the Avs going, too. The Avs are breaking my heart. The Thunder are giving me life, and the Avs are breaking my heart. So it's a little bit of good, a little bit of bad, but as long as we keep thundering up, we'll be all right.
I thought of you because, you know, after those Thunder games, there's so much adrenaline flowing that, like, you can't go to bed. Like, you're not just going to say, okay, time to go to sleep. And I had SportsCenter on, and they were showing Avalanche highlights. I was about to call them the Avs, like I follow them, but they're showing Colorado Avalanche highlights, and they scored the first goal. And I'm like, man, this is going to be a great night for Colby. A Thunder win, his Avalanche, and Sydney. I have no idea how he follows hockey in addition to all the sports we talk about, in addition to the Thunder, in addition to playing so much golf. But Colby likes the Avalanche. And then I saw that they lost to those pesky Las Vegas Knights. Is that what they are, the Knights?
Yeah, they're the Vegas Golden Knights. So the Avs have two of the 5 to 10 best players in the world, and one of them has been out for game one and game two. So, like, you know how J-Dub's out, but the Thunder are just kind of a machine and they keep turning. Cale Makar went out for the Avs, and it just – they look like a different team. Like, they have absolutely no idea what they're doing. And, yeah, it's a tough part of the season to be dealing with injuries. But, look, it's the end of May. Everybody's dealing with them, hockey, basketball. It is what it is. Survival of the fittest.
Well, I'm gearing up for the World Cup. Do you get into the World Cup in the summertime?
I don't gear up for the World Cup. I don't get geeked for the World Cup. But when it's happening, I love like a Wednesday at 2, you know, USA and whoever, England. Didn't we get USA and England several years back?
We did.
A thrilling 0-0 draw,
yes.
Yep. Yeah, I saw where Gio Reyna got on the team. So I keep half an eye on it, and I get excited for it when it gets here, but it's not like a big lead up in my house or anything.
Well, I always, of course, follow the United States, of course, but I'm also a big England fan, and both teams – hey, what's wrong with that? I grew up watching the English Premier League. Like, the MLS didn't even exist when I was a kid, you know?
For those just listening on audio, I was kind of cocking my head a little bit like a dog would, as Carson said he's an England fan.
It's not 1776. I mean, come on.
No, you're right. You're right. It seemed very counterintuitive to me for you to be an England fan. But Premier League fan your whole life, it makes sense because a bunch of those guys are on the English team. Also, the U.S. men's national team has not given fans a whole lot to go on in the knockout stage over the last, I don't know, 30 years. So hopefully this year will be different since we're one of the hosts. I don't know.
I'm part English, part Scottish, and Scotland's just horrible. I'm probably more Scottish than English, so it's probably blasphemy on that end too. But the reason I bring both them up is both coaches have taken a very controversial team thus far. I mean, United States has, you know, the leaks have come out. They're not, like, it's so silly. They tell the players on Friday who's making it, who's not, but they wait to announce the roster on Tuesday as if as if that's not going to get out. And England's manager is bringing a bunch of lesser talents, but are quote unquote in form, which for me is a total fallacy. Once you get to the highest level, form is temporary, class is permanent. So he took a bunch of players he thought were playing better and playing more than their big name players, which again, I can already hear people saying, well, the big name players haven't done it for England. They're trying to go on chemistry. Okay, fine. And then US, they took like four midfielders total as far as in this, like if Tyler Adams gets hurt, the US is totally screwed. And so I love Pochettino. I wanted him to coach Man United years ago when he was tearing it up at Tottenham. But he hasn't instilled a lot of faith in me. So I'm a little down this week before the World Cup's even began with some of their roster selections. So that's where I'm at.
When does it start?
Mid-June, so a couple weeks.
Okay, so it'll at least, we'll be past hockey and basketball, so I'll at least have the bandwidth to consume it. I'm just...
Yeah, it's the best part of the World Cup. There's nothing going on besides it. Nothing.
Well, and what's fixing to happen is Oklahoma State women's golf is about to make the match play. Oklahoma State men's golf is going to be at Omni next week. Baseball is having a regional going. All these things are happening. Since the golf's being played out in California, they want the primetime window. It airs from like 6 to 10 p.m. our time. I've got Thunder going. I've got Avs going. And now I'm fixing to have women's golf, men's golf, and baseball all going. Three TVs may not be enough. I don't know how I'm going to have the bandwidth, but the amount of sports I'm going to consume over the next 2 weeks – probably illegal in some states.
Yeah, you're gonna have to make some decisions, I think, at least for just your attention span sake.
The only decision that has been made is that the Thunder get the main screen with the volume. I say it all times, but dude, if the golf is anything like what the golf was last year, I mean, the golf last year was pure electricity. So there's gonna be decisions to make.
Yes, Oklahoma State has a national championship to defend. That'll be a lot of fun. We're going to talk about that in the golf school goodbye. We're going to get to baseball and softball season. The postseason's well underway. And also a really interesting story from ESPN, kind of taking us kind of behind the curtain, kind of behind the scenes for Eric Morris and the rebuilding job he's been able to do at Oklahoma State. So before we get into all that, though, you know this show is sponsored by Chris's University Spirit, your one-stop cowboy shop. Be sure to shop at chrisuniversityspirit.com. All day, every day, free standard shipping on orders over $75. You know where to find them, at 244 South Knobloch Street there on Campus Corner there in Stillwater. Get your latest, greatest OSU apparel, because there is a lot of sports to follow right now as we wrap up spring sports heading into the summertime. And we appreciate Chris sponsoring the show, as always. So, without further ado, Colby, I think we got to start with softball. Again, they made it to the Super Regional. As I get my rundown working here. My rundown is not working. Let's go here. Okay, there we go. Softball. Really good season, Colby. They make it to Super Regional. They go up against a really good team in Nebraska with Jordy Ball, now Fromm, the really good pitcher. And I think so many times, Colby, when you see softball teams that make it to Oklahoma City that compete for national championships, you got to have the elite pitching. And Ruby Malin did not have a great, you know, Super Regional, but they really ran into kind of a buzzsaw in Jordy Fromm. I mean, she's one of the best pitchers in the country. Their season does ultimately end in the Supers losing to Nebraska.
Oh, pardon me, I was muted. Yeah, it was a tough draw. When I saw that we got Nebraska and we got Jordy Fromm, it's like, man, this is going to be tough. I had hope because Oklahoma State split with Nebraska in the regular season. Those were both one-run games. One of those games went to 11. The game Oklahoma State won went to 11. Ruby Malin has obviously been out of her mind, but I think this was a really tough draw for Oklahoma State to have to go to Nebraska for the Supers. Look, you're supposed to have a tough draw in the Supers. It's supposed to be hard to make it to Oklahoma City. We'd gotten used to it there for a while. This was a really good team, and ultimately they just didn't quite have enough. It was 8-1 and 9-1, the two games in Lincoln, and it's a tough way for the season to end, to get bounced in the Big 12 tournament and then to lose your Super Regional. But, you know, it is what it is. They got on a really hot stretch. It was a fun season. They had the wins against OU and Texas. You're not guaranteed a spot in Oklahoma City. Oklahoma State softball has no preordained right to be in Oklahoma City, and they've put together a really powerful program over the past several years. I like the way they battled down the stretch, but it ultimately just wasn't enough against Nebraska. And Nebraska's a real national championship contender with Jordy Fromm. She is so unbelievably good. You know, she was at OU for a couple of years, went to Nebraska, and Yeah, it's funny. I kind of remember laughing at OU when she transferred to Nebraska, and now I would imagine that they're all laughing at us as she ends our season. So yeah, that was a bummer for it to go down that way.
Yeah, but again, I think if you're going to super regionals, like, and you don't happen to make it to Oklahoma City, I think you can live with that. Of course, that is the goal. You want to make it to Oklahoma City every year, but it's not as if they went out, you know, very early in postseason play. You make it to super regional, go up against a, you know, one of the best pitchers in the country. I think that's certainly understandable. And I think it's a really, you know, it's a credit to Ruby Malin. They got this far. We don't want to, you know, pile on her because she started the game with her 800th career strikeout. That ranks her third all time at Oklahoma State in program history. In two seasons, she struck out 389 batters to rank 13th all time in program history. That's pretty incredible. Ended her career with 392 innings pitched, which would rank 16th in program history. So she made a big impact. And I look, it's the NIL era. We'll have to see if Kenny Gajewski can reload for next year. But all in all, the way the season started versus how it ended, I think you could chalk it up to a really good coaching job by Kenny Gajewski to kind of turn things around, because things were not going well early in the year. We're kind of wondering what was going on with OSU. But all in all, I think you would probably give it an A minus, an A solid, B plus. Kind of where would you grade them out?
I think just a solid A. I think an A plus is getting back to Oklahoma City, but just a solid, yeah, A. Like, it was a really good season, and they ran up against the juggernaut in the Supers. That happens sometimes, but they did what they were supposed to do, hosting the regional, took care of Stanford a couple of times and played really well, and were clearly the class of that regional. And then you just have to hope you catch lightning in a bottle against Nebraska, and it wasn't able to happen. So I wouldn't go as low as an A minus. I wouldn't go as high as an A plus. Just a solid A of a season for Gajewski and the Cowgirls. So yeah, just another solid effort.
Yep, I would agree. Oklahoma State baseball, they were still one of the hottest teams in the country, certainly one of the hottest teams in the Big 12, but they did lose to the eventual Big 12 champs, Kansas, 9-2 in the semifinals of the Big 12 baseball tournament. But all in all, Colby, I think they had won 12 of 15 going into that game. They lost to KU, who's ranked 13th in the country. But from all the projections I've seen, they've kind of played themselves into, they're not going to host, but be a solid number two seed, where you go and take down somebody on their turf, and then you put yourself in a really good position perhaps for the Supers as well.
Yeah, these last few weeks, Oklahoma State's been a fringe top 25 team, and just, you know, Colin Ritchie doing what he does, it's unbelievable. He's obviously the headliner, the main attraction. But, yeah, to work their way up to a two seed is fantastic. Tough season against Kansas. Shout out to Kansas, man, putting it together on the diamond. I played golf with a guy who lives in Lawrence probably a month ago. It was right after the Oklahoma State-Kansas series. And he said that the whole town has just gone baseball crazy. Like, they've just really invested in it, and people are loving it. And they had an unbelievable season. Took 2 out of 3 from Oklahoma State in the regular season and then beat us in the semis. So that game against UCF was a late surge from Oklahoma State to win that one 12-6. It was much closer than the final score would indicate. UCF hit a home run in the 5th or 6th to tie that game at 5 or 5 or 6. And then Oklahoma State just ran away from them there the last few innings. So the selection show is tomorrow. We're recording this on Sunday. So tomorrow, Memorial Day, is the selection show. 11 o'clock Central Time on ESPN2. If you want to tune in and see where Oklahoma State is going. I saw Texas A&M was the story that I read as the most likely scenario for Oklahoma State. But the reality is, you're the two seed. You're going into somebody else's house. You're going to have to pull off some upsets. So hopefully they can get enough from their arms. I trust Oklahoma State to hit the baseball. I trust some of those balls to leave the yard. You've got to get enough from your pitching, whether that be starters, bullpen, everybody. It has to come together, group effort, and win some of those early games so that you're not having to play extra games to work your way back through the regional. I don't know that Oklahoma State has the depth in their rotation to do that. So I think getting those first couple of games is going to be key if they're actually going to pull off the upset and make their way to a Super.
Yeah, I don't think they have the arms to make it through the loser's bracket either. And I'm totally with you. Like, I covered a lot. Like, when I first started in television, like, college baseball was something you covered a ton because the Thunder hadn't started yet. I believe, the year before, I started in TV the year before the Thunder came to Oklahoma City. So, like, when you got to spring, man, you were covering college baseball. You weren't covering NBA playoffs. You weren't covering Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant. So I covered a ton of OU and OSU baseball, and Kansas was kind of like the team you felt sorry for. I always compare it to like Texas A&M basketball back in the early 90s with Eddie Sutton. Like they'd come to town, you're just like, oh, poor A&M, they're horrible. And that's kind of how you felt about Kansas. So for them being the best team in the Big 12, that's certainly bizarro world for me. And the regional I actually saw Oklahoma State projected to, Colby, was Florida State. I don't like that. I don't like when my Seminoles have to play my Cowboys. I don't know how to handle that. I always pull for Florida State to win in baseball because they've always been really good. Certainly if OSU's not there. Of course, I'll pull for my alma mater. Florida State's had a ton of success in baseball, and I want OSU to do well. But I hate that one of my teams would have to go home in that scenario. So I'm hoping for an A&M regional, put it that way.
Yeah, 10-year-old Carson would be very conflicted seeing Oklahoma State and Florida State matched up. If you're not a longtime listener of the pod, what was, just short version, Spark Notes, your origins as a Florida State fan?
Yeah, I'm sure people have heard this story before, but I'll tell it again for all our new listeners. My dad took me to Lewis Field. My first season to go to OSU football games was the year they went winless under Pat Jones. They went 0-10-1. And I think I told my dad, I don't think I want to go to these anymore. These aren't much fun. So I don't think we mainly stuck with basketball because Eddie, we were there from Eddie's first season on. So like we were OSU basketball people. So on college football Saturdays, I sat in front of the TV, and every single weekend, there was a 14-year stretch where Florida State was ranked top five in the country. They had the garnet and gold, the awesome spear on the helmet. I loved Bobby Bowden, was like the coolest dude of all time. Charlie Ward was my first favorite player. I mean, who wouldn't love a dude that played in the NBA and won the Heisman? Just an uber athlete. They ran shotgun, five wide, no huddle offense. It was like everything I love. And I fell in love from that moment. And I was like, this is my team. I pull for them. I've been to Tallahassee several times. And I still pull for them. I had a Florida State Rivals account in college and followed their recruitment closer than OSU's. Like I was obsessed back in the day. Now that I'm older and further removed, I still follow them and want them to win, but I'm not living and dying like I used to.
Yeah, so it's funny the 0-10-1 broke your spirit, because I took my daughter up last year for 1-11, and she is just geeked to go back. I mean, she cannot wait. She says, are we going to the football stadium? We'll get in the car. We'll be on the highway. Are we going to the football stadium? Well, not today, baby. We're a few more months. We'll go to the football stadium.
I was a little older. I was probably 10.
Yeah, fair enough.
But that's the origin, and certainly Florida State football more so than basketball and baseball, but – that's how that happened. Where are we going next? Oh, speaking of football, let's get to the really interesting story on ESPN.com from Max Olson. Really, I encourage everyone to go read it. Very cool behind the scenes of Eric Morris kind of rebuilding this roster. And, you know, Colby, we talked so much about it in the lead up when he was hired. Will they, won't they, as far as, you know, Wyatt Young, Drew Mestemaker, and all these players following him. Well, it kind of dives deep into all of those players making those decisions. But this is pretty amazing. Some of the numbers in here I wanted to talk about. Among the 66 players who transferred out of Oklahoma State this offseason, only 25 landed at other Power 4 programs. So about 37% of the guys who left made it to Power 4 schools. I think that shows you the talent level that Eric Morris inherited and kind of ushered out the door.
Yeah, seems high.
Once the portal opened on January 2nd of the two-week transfer window, it became a nonstop speed dating exercise as the Cowboys staff huddled to figure out what they needed, which players to target, and how much to offer. Morris and Raj Murthy were living together in an Airbnb rental at the time, eating too much pizza and trying to survive one day at a time. So this new look squad.
Can I just pause you real quick? The visual of the Eric Morris, Raj Murthy Airbnb living together. Because remember, Raj Murthy he's basically one of these college kids. He just turned, what, 24, 25? And yep. Eric Morris is a grown man in his early 40s as the head football coach at Oklahoma State University. To be a fly on the wall of the Airbnb where Eric Morris and Raj Murthy are living together in the wake of accepting the Oklahoma State head coach and general manager job, trying to put a roster together in the portal era. That must have been like, I don't know if you've watched Silicon Valley on HBO. Like, I get Silicon Valley vibes of Eric Morris and Raj Murthy living together, trying to put together a roster.
Now, you've asked me that before. I need to watch that show. It's got guys I really like in it. Like, Oh, what's the Canadian guy's name? He's Jack now. Kamal.
Yeah.
Monjani.
Yeah.
Love that guy.
Yeah, you nailed it. Yeah, you nailed it. Monjani, yeah.
No, but it was that hectic. It was like dudes just living together, eating pizza, because like the really like insane part of this, and just shows you how unfeasible this era really is they would bring in guys, they would pay for last minute flights that are really expensive to come to Stillwater from Tulsa or Oklahoma City airports. And even like they would have the guy on campus in their office, they would get a call that someone else committed at that same position and essentially has claimed that salary, that money. And they have to tell the guy, hey, sorry, your spot's no longer here. Appreciate you coming. Like, it's just, they didn't know who was coming. Like, they had a ton of people cancel visits. It's just, I got like a headache just reading all of this. And the fact, and here's the interesting thing, Colby. This is, we've speculated for a long time, you and I, can they reproduce the Indiana model, the Kurt Cignetti model? Well, listen to this. The new look squad imported 495 career starts and more than 36,000 career snaps of Division I experience amongst its 60 transfer additions. Only one other Power 4 program, Colorado, has added more than 400 starts to its roster this year. So let me read that again. 36,000 career snaps of Division I experience, and only Colorado has added more than 400 Division I starts to its roster this year. So like Kirk Cignetti at Indiana, Morris has gathered enough data over the years to determine he'd make a much bigger bet on production rather than potential. He talked a lot about that too, Colby. Remember how with all those recruits that OSU was getting a year or two ago? Like, oh, well, he had all these offers out of high school. He went to LSU. He didn't play, but man, he was a really good recruit back then. We could turn him around. Well, at North Texas, all Morris did was bring in guys that played a ton. Those were the guys that panned out. The guys he took shots on, potential-wise, rarely panned out. And so I encourage everyone to read this article, because even if you were excited before reading it and thought, okay, even the most optimistic view that they could turn into Indiana, you just read the data behind it, I would be very, very surprised if OSU doesn't compete for a Big 12 championship this year. Just the sheer raw data, Colby, the sheer raw production that they're putting in place on paper and on the field this year should lead to a lot of wins. It really should.
Yeah, so I had two big takes after reading this, which was, number one, it worked for us this cycle. College athletics is broken. Like, it's just the yep. allocation of resources, the idea that you would bring a kid in and have him sitting in your office and then have to tell him, I am so sorry, this spot no longer exists, can we call you an Uber? Like, obviously that's not exactly how it goes, but that just is a heartbreaking way for everything to function, and really I think takes a lot of the human element out of it, about caring for the kids from the moment they walk through the door to be recruited to the moment they graduate and leave, kind of what we all have known about collegiate athletics our whole life. I understand that it is about the money. Obviously, I mean, we talked a couple of weeks ago about the NCAA college basketball going to 76 teams. It's a cash grab. There are stories now. Oh my God, was it the Big Ten maybe was saying, let's go to a 2014 playoff in college football? Like, are you kidding me? Do you know what the back end of the top 25 normally looks like in college football? Like, that's a joke that we would include that many schools and think that they have a chance to win a national championship. It's all just such a blatant money grab. Let's set that aside momentarily to talk about Oklahoma State football, because the cycle appears to have gone our way this offseason. Like, Morris and Murty in an Airbnb, that is the meeting of the minds right there. That is some powerful football minds putting together a roster that they feel like can compete immediately. There are some books out there I've seen still throwing a 5.5 number on this Oklahoma State team. And I get that there's a lot of unknown. I get that they were 1-11 last year. But I just think that this staff really understands the assignment in modern college football. I think Murty is a whiz kid in what he's been able to accomplish. And getting Mestemaker and all of his guys over, like, that number just seems way too low. And even including, you know, I think we do have to rewire our brains a little bit on what a win-loss total might look like at the end of the season, because I think that we always, for years, for 15 years as Oklahoma State fans, we just penciled in 3-0 to start the season. Oregon comes to town this year. Dante Moore stayed. That's a big problem. It'll be a good measuring stick game. I can assure you right now, as we sit here today on May 24th, I'm not picking Oklahoma State to win that game. Even with all the turnover, even as good as I'm going to feel about Oklahoma State football, Oregon has proven itself to be one of the top five teams in the country, what, 5 years in a row? Post-COVID, I can't remember a season where Oregon wasn't one of the top five teams in the country, and their success goes back much further than that. So if you're 2-1 coming out of the non-con, I mean, I don't know, can this team go 7-2 in conference play? I mean, that's a 9-win team. So I think that Oklahoma State fans have every right to have high hopes going into the season with just all of the production that they have coming into campus.
I think I saw Oregon already has opened as like a 17.5-point favorite, I think was the line I saw. I think that number will come down, actually, once people realize like the roster that OSU's put together. And I almost kind of compare it to that Georgia game. You're young, much younger than Colby. But do you remember that Georgia game when they came to town? They absolutely curb stomped OSU in Athens. I was at that game. And then they came to the brand new Boone Pickens Stadium, and OSU were able to beat, you know, was Matt Stafford on that team? No, I think Stafford left that year. I think he was number one pick.
No. So they, yeah.
A little different with Dante Moore. He's the Stafford in this example, and he actually is making it to Stillwater. But hey, I kind of look at those two games the same as far as this program is on this level, OSU is on this level, and everyone expects them to lose. But I don't know. I think OSU could certainly win the game, but I would agree with you that I don't expect them to.
I definitely am old enough to remember that Georgia game. Des Bryant caught that over-the-shoulder pass running right down into the end zone where we were sitting. I believe that's the Georgia team. I think that they had just lost Matthew Stafford and A.J. Green, who went on to be – did he get into the Hall of Fame? Cincinnati Bengals receiver that was there forever. Nah. He might not even be eligible yet. I don't know if he'll make it or not. I don't have his numbers in front of me. But
No Sean Moreno might have left too.
Yeah. That was some elite talent on those Georgia teams. I actually think that – the year before Oklahoma State beat them in Stillwater, I think that was one of the years that made Georgia fans go, all right, Mark Richt, what are we doing? What are we doing with an NFL roster that can't win a national title? And then they came to Oklahoma State, and what was it, Zach and Dez curb stomped them. And, that day was a whole lot of fun. So could it be something like that? Sure. If Oklahoma State somehow beats Oregon, my takes are going to be very just beyond irrational. Just – we'll do an emergency pod if Oklahoma State beats Oregon, and my takes will not be from this earth.
Well, full circle. Mark Richt is – we'll bring this back to Florida State. He's the reason Oklahoma has a national championship in 2000 because he had taken the Georgia job and stayed on to be the offensive coordinator, didn't score a single point against Bob Stoops and that team. They were so much better than OU that year, and just haunted my childhood forever and my life forever, really, that Florida State not only lost the national championship, but they – lost to OU. And like, if they hadn't lost that game, like OU wouldn't have won a national championship in our lifetimes, Colby. This is all Mark Richt's fault.
I don't think it's even a hot take to say that OU was the third best team in the country in 2000 behind Florida State and Miami. But the reality is you play the games. OU won the games. They're the champs. It is what it is.
Yeah, it is, unfortunately. And I've never gotten over that day. One more thing too, like Mestemaker and, you know, he was getting recruited again. It confirmed in this article what I was hearing, that Oregon threw a ton of money at him and he was really considering it. And Eric Morris just called him and said, you know, don't break my heart. Like he left it at that. And I think Mestemaker really thought about, kind of like we you and I bandied about a bunch, was do you really want to go someplace new for more money for a system that may not fit you, a coach that may not understand you as well? And clearly he made the call that he was most comfortable with, and the money didn't hurt. They got him $7 million. But even like a Wyatt Young said, all these schools like Michigan and Louisville were telling me I was going to be the man. I was going to get all these passes thrown my way, over 1,000 yards. But then he's like, is that true? I don't know. I've known this coach a week. Is a week a long enough time to develop a relationship for my future? I think he ultimately told himself, I'm going wherever Drew Mestemaker goes. He's the best quarterback in the country. He and I just absolutely destroyed people. Why would I not go do that? And just, I guess to summarize it, Colby, and Eric Moore spoke to this, just how great of a fit OSU was. Stillwater being, you know, 200 miles up the road on I-35 was a seamless transition for all the players, all the assistant coaches, for Eric Morris to raise his family in a town like Stillwater. Just, again, I feel like I'm getting a little out over my skis here, but it just, this seems like the perfect hire, and they've built the perfect team to not only hit the ground running, but they talked a lot in this article as well. It's like, our expectation is to win and win now. I think they're expecting to really, if not win the Big 12, be there for the Big 12 championship game. I think that's the expectation from everyone in the building, which is to say that out loud, Colby, from where we've been the last 2 years is just, it's still hard to wrap your mind around. It really is.
Yeah, I think they have extremely high expectations and goals for what they can do this season. I don't think that they want to try to build for a couple of years and then compete in the Big 12, because that's just not what modern college football is. And I think those stories about Wyatt Young and those guys, it just, even in the modern era of college athletics, relationships still matter. Trust still matters. Like, these are human beings, and those things still matter. Can I make a confession now after the fact, Carson?
Certainly.
With the way everything has gone over the past 5 to 6 months, how much of a fit Eric Morris feels like at Oklahoma State, all of the talent that he has brought in around him, Raj Murthy, who I did not know near enough about in the process, I feel like such a dope for being an Alex Golish guy for as long as I was. I loved what he did down at South Florida. I thought he could bring some of his guys with him, but nothing that Alex Golish could have done over the past 5 or 6 months could have matched what Eric Morris has done over the past 5 or 6 months. The fit couldn't possibly be any better than it is with Morris. It's just, obviously it was Eric Morris. Obvious in hindsight, like, obviously this was the guy to come to Stillwater. I think I looked at it too linear of like football resume and didn't factor fit in enough, and the puzzle pieces are just it was Eric Morris all along.
Yeah, I mean, fit certainly matters, especially at a place like Stillwater, which is super unique. But I mean, Golish went to an Auburn that's very, I think, similar to Stillwater. You got Big Brother in the same state, so it'll be interesting to compare their win-loss records. Obviously, it's not all created equal being in the Big 12 versus the SEC, but no, I mean, I would certainly agree. I think Alex Golish could have won and won big here based on his track record. But you make a good point in that, could he have assembled, like, for me, it comes down to, could he have assembled as good of a roster as Eric Morris has today? And I think the answer is no. So I think I agree with you. I think in hindsight, Morris was the best decision they could have possibly made. Now, I never said I think gun to my head, I preferred Golish at the time. I was just reporting what I was hearing. Like, I don't think I ever felt strongly about one or the other as far as who they'd pick. I kept hearing that Golish was kind of their pick, but clearly, I think I also should have factored in perhaps the existing relationship from Weiberg to Morris as well from their days back at Texas Tech. But all that said, though, Colby, like, this is our guy, and like, I think he's going to win a lot of games, and I think, like, it's just really exciting to stop and think, like, as great as Mike Gundy was and is and deserves all the plaudits and all the caveats we say every time we discuss Mike Gundy, didn't it feel like there was just a little bit left, or maybe even a lot at certain years? It felt like there was a lot left on the table as far as what Oklahoma State could be as a football program. Just the recruiting was never quite all in. They were never quite trying to pull out all the stops in every game, more like trying to just get across the finish line some games. Like, I think Morris is going to put the throttle down and try to run people out of the stadium like Mike Leach used to do, his predecessor. And he's just so proven at finding guys who can play. Again, his method of production over potential really intrigues me, because how many times, Colby, have we seen on the Oklahoma State's roster that the guy who ends up emerging as the number one receiver on the team usually isn't the guy that had the most stars next to his name? It's just who can play and who can't. And I think he's identifying those guys. And I'm really, really excited the more we learn about Morris and the program he's building. Did it feel like there was a lot left on the table under Gundy? You get what I'm saying there?
Yeah, it's, some years. It was the tell of two coins with Gundy. We all know that. There were years where it felt like they just absolutely maximized everything. 23 was one of those years. 21 was one of those years. And then there were years where things were left on the table. 17 is one that comes to mind. 13 is one that comes to mind. 11, obviously, they maximized everything. And 11, the Friday night thing in Ames was weird with the plane crash that morning. One of the worst days in Oklahoma State University history. I think it was both with Gundy. There were years where it felt like, oh my gosh, and then there were years where it felt like, oh my gosh. so yeah, I think hopefully you know, if Eric Morris is here for 20 years, hopefully there aren't so many of the years where it's like, God, what happened in those three home games in 2017 where you couldn't beat TCU, Kansas State, or Oklahoma? You got Byron Pringle returning four kicks for touchdowns. You got, you know, I still remember you had the entire right side of your line missing against TCU and got torched. You didn't give the ball to Justice Hill at all in a three-minute drill when he's got 260 all-purpose yards at the end of the OU game. Just stuff like that it sticks in your memory for a long time. When you care, those seasons where things get left on the table, you remember some things from those years.
Yeah, it felt like they never parlayed 2011 into something greater. It felt like it kind of just flatlined after 2011. Whereas in the moment, during that 2011 season, this felt like, okay, anything is possible for Oklahoma State football. We can dream as big as Alabama, as big as Oklahoma. Like we were the best team in the country that year is how myself, yep, and I think I speak for a lot of Oklahoma State fans that feel that way. It felt like we were the best team in the country. And I distinctly remember thinking, okay, like even though Weeden and Blackman will eventually move on, like we're going to parlay this thing into top 15, top 10 recruiting classes, and we're going to go for it. Just never felt like we truly went for it. Felt like Mike got comfortable and we kind of just did this instead of this. And watching what Morris is doing, it seems like he took it over down here for our video watchers, and he's taking it like on an incline that's more like that for people who watch the stock market and things like that. We're going up, straight up.
Yeah, Mike did Eric a big favor by letting the thing totally bottom out before his tenure at Oklahoma State ended, because now Eric Morris took over and it's like just about anything he does, we're like, you see? And it's all good vibes from Eric Morris.
I don't think it's someone – I got tweeted a bunch this weekend. I'll ask you. To me, it's not the best form of radio, but you know, OSU football Mount Rushmore was tweeted at me, and someone in the replies said this, and it hadn't really, I mean, I'm sure I've thought it along the way, but it didn't really hit me like it did until I read this. He said, Mike Gundy cannot be on Mount Rushmore because he left the program the same way he found it. And
you could
argue,
sorry,
it's worse because Les Miles did not leave this thing at 1-11.
Yeah, but that to me underscores the fact that there were 18 good years before the end. Like, yes, technically he left it that way, but I still think he built an unreal foundation where now Eric Morris comes in, and I think it'll only take like a few wins, and then people nationally will be like, oh yeah, look, Oklahoma State's been good for two decades. What, just a blip in the radar. And I think the context around it with NIL and the portal and stuff, I can't go there. Mike Gundy, for me, would be an easy plug and play on my Oklahoma State football Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, and I think I totally agree with you. And I think the way I agree with you is you and I were the ones arguing how good of a job this is. I think that's directly related to Mike Gundy. Mike Gundy made this one of the top three jobs that was on the open market. And there were some really good jobs on the open market. I think that's a total credit to Mike Gundy. So I do think that's a bit of a harsh statement. Sure, yeah, it's worse than what he founded, but there's a reason you're able to land Eric Morris because of how Mike Gundy actually left it. The infrastructure in place, the stadium, what he built, exactly. So I think I totally agree with you there. So let's move on to Thunder versus the world. We're wearing our Thunder gear. You know, I wore this shirt last time they were playing the Lakers, and that paid off. Are you a superstitious person? Because I am. So I wore this shirt, and they beat the Lakers. And I was like, game one, I was so excited for the Spurs that I wore it while I was watching game one. And they were getting just their tails kicked throughout game one. At halftime, I took the shirt off, but they still lost. So I'm not wearing this during any games the rest of the way. And that's just how it's gotta be, Colby. Are you as superstitious as I am?
No, not with like shirts and stuff for games. I'm not superstitious with where I sit, with what room I watch the game in. My mom is that way. My mom will go change clothes at halftime of an OSU football game. She'll like it if she leaves the room. Like if we're playing bad and then she leaves the room and we score two touchdowns, she'll go watch in her bedroom for a little while to see if like that's the vibe that changed things up. And I'm like, I just fully believe that I have no impact over what's happening. The universe, I don't know. Maybe the universe, there's bigger things at play. But I'm only superstitious with things that are like if I'm going to play golf, my shoes are always put on in the exact same way. my coins are put into my pocket in the same order. I have a big coin that I use to mark my putts, and if it's in somebody else's line, I have a small coin. Big coin goes in first, then small coin, then I put two identical tees in my pocket. My glove always goes in the same pocket. It never goes in the other pocket.
so you are superstitious, what you're telling me.
yes, but not with like... Not with sports viewing, because somehow for me, it feels like if I'm going to do something that I have a little bit of control over, then I need to do all the little things that get my brain in the right place to perform, if that makes any sense, but not with sports viewing.
I was the same way when I played. I wouldn't step on the chalk lines. That was a big no-no. I would have same routine every time I stepped on the field in soccer, and I was a little bit psycho with all of it, so I'm the same way. You want to like... And a little advantage you think you can get mentally. That's the best way to go about it. But I just thank God for Charles Barkley and Tim Legler, you know, people that are actually respected and actually played the game at a very high level. Like this Thunder derangement syndrome, which has actually caught on. I saw Ethan Strauss wrote an article called Thunder Derangement Syndrome talking about.
Nice.
Look, again, if you don't like the Thunder and you think Shea's boring and you think Lu Dort fouls too much, that's totally fine. Like that's part of being the best team in the league. I expect to be hated as the best team in the league. But this fundamental propaganda campaign that is simply not based in any merit or truth about the Thunder being floppers and that Shea is a flopper is just one of the craziest things I can remember. And I've followed sports my entire life. I don't ever remember a narrative so strong that the broadcast team won't stop talking about it, even in a game when Shea hasn't shot a free throw yet, 5 minutes left in the third quarter. I've never seen anything like it, Colby. I just don't understand it. The Spurs get all of the calls. Wimby flops 10 times more than anyone on the Thunder roster, let alone Shea. I cannot wrap my mind around it. It's insane. National basketball writers and voices, people like Bill Simmons, have it all wrong. How can this be, Colby? Is this just because no one likes piddly old Oklahoma City having the best team in the league? Is that it?
That's part of it, I think. I don't actually mind if it's just like random people on the NBA subreddit who are just dorks and they're just looking for an echo chamber to be mad about stuff like that. That doesn't bother me. It bothers me when Mike Tirico, who has long been one of my favorites, like I would say before this series, I really liked the broadcast team of Tirico, Reggie Miller, and Jamal Crawford. Like if I'm just watching neutral games and even games one and two, I thought that they were mostly fine. You know, Reggie made the comment about the league's going to take a long look at Hartenstein. And, like, I think what he meant was, like, teams can send in clips and, like, they're going to be watching this and the officials are going to have to keep an eye on whether people are holding each other and stuff like that, which is fine. But for them to sit there in game three and talk about Shea and his – to how often he gets to the line and to talk about the foul baiting stuff and to basically do a hot take talk show in the middle of a broadcast. It was the big problem I had with Doris last year, is that her and Dave Pasch did that in the middle of a finals broadcast. I'm sorry. If Bill Simmons wants to do that on his little talk show, do that on your little talk show. This is the broadcast of the Western Conference Finals. You are there to call the action. I had a big problem with Tirico and Reggie and Jamal Crawford doing that in Game 3. I think Stephon Castle had shot 10 free throws in Game 3 before Shea shot his first free throw while he's being double and triple teamed every possession and just absolutely mugged the entire game. It's pretty insane. As far as the internet dorks, like I think that they just don't like the fact that they turn their TV on and they have to see Oklahoma City be great. So then they turn their computer or their phone on to go listen to other people complain about it too. And that's fine. Like you hate us because we're great. It is what it is. Keep that mess off the broadcast. I cannot wait for Mike Breen, Tim Legler, and Richard Jefferson in the next round if Oklahoma City gets past the Spurs, because RJ and Legler are both big SGA guys. They both love SGA and think he's just an absolute god, which is what he is. He's a god among mortals out there. Like he's easily been the best player in this series. Wimby had one game. Shea was bad in game one. Games two and three, Shea shot 6 of 17 from the floor in game three, and it was a masterclass. Like whether the shots go in or not, he controlled that game from start to finish in a way that allowed and empowered Alex Caruso and Jay Will and Jared McCain to have some of the best games of their life. the attention that he draws makes him the MVP of this series. But if you wanted to, you could easily give it to Caruso, who, if we're ranking the three best players in this series on both sides, it is some combination of SGA, Wimby, and Caruso. And you can almost rank those three in any order you want to, and I wouldn't put up too big of a fight. But yeah, it's those three. It's SGA, Wimby, and Caruso.
I got a lot to say about Caruso, but I'm totally with you on Tirico. I think Tirico's like among the best in the business. And it's just been strange because even the times when the Spurs were actually called for a foul, he always brought the discussion back to Hartenstein. It's like,
yeah,
why are we talking about Hartenstein? The Spurs just committed a foul. Talk about that. Stephon Castle had shot more free throws than the entire Thunder team at one point. And the best part of the whole broadcast, Colby, I don't know if you picked up on this. I tweeted it. It took off. Tirico uttered the line, first free throws of the night for SGA with 5 minutes left in the third quarter. And it was just dead silent for like a minute straight because they were like, oh, shit, what do we say here? We've been talking about SGA foul baiting and he hasn't even shot a free throw yet. Oops.
Yeah.
And that's – I'm totally with you. Like, I don't care. Like, Twitter is just – become a, just such a toxic place. I don't care about that either. Do you have something? Raise your hand.
I just, because we were talking about the broadcast and everything and all the stuff they're saying, and it just made me think, I actually wanted to shout out Mitch Johnson, the Spurs coach, because we have to listen to Chris Finch sit up there and Devin Booker and Austin Reeves and J.J. Redick, and we have to listen to all these guys sit up there and talk about,
they're partially to blame,
you know,
for this.
And talk about, you know, Shea's just out there manipulating the officials. You know what Mitch Johnson said after the game whenever he was asked about Shea's free throws? He's like, yeah, I think when I watch the film, I'm going to see a huge lack of discipline on our end. That's exactly what it was. Stop biting on the pump fake. Stop getting in the air. Stop landing in his space. Like, he gets you in the pump fake, goes into you. That's the D-Wade special. That's the Kobe special. That's the Michael Jordan special. He jumps up in the air and Stephon Castle just like
Wimby
takes
did it
his
in
legs
game
out.
One. Wimby did the same thing in game one.
So I saw an Instagram reel where somebody was like, here goes Shea foul baiting again. And it was a picture of Stephon Castle taking his legs out on a three-pointer and giving him nowhere to land. And even on the broadcast, Jamal Crawford's like, that's a foul. Like, what are – and I really wanted to shout out Mitch Johnson because I appreciate the fact that he didn't get up there and buy into the whole conversation. He said, my guys have to be disciplined defensively. Like, yes, thank you. Finally, a coach said it. Finally.
Yeah, and – I was pleasantly surprised by that too, because he kind of looks like a bit of a hothead out there, just like Castle is. But again, the fact that so many, like Jay Williams going on ESPN and saying he can't watch the Thunder because they foul bait, like you're not paying attention. You don't watch the games. Like,
yeah,
it's those people. Well,
did you see him get called out for his Shea take from literally 1 year ago?
I didn't watch it. I didn't have the stomach to watch it. What did he say in the take from a year ago?
1 year ago, he went on like this 2-minute diatribe about how people need to respect Shea's greatness and how Shea is not an MVP, a free throw merchant MVP. And now 1 year later, he's the exact same player. He's much better, but he's the exact same player. And Jay Williams is like, yeah, I can't watch this guy. I'm like, dude, you just outed yourself as a grifter who's just trying to tailor your opinion to whatever is going to get you the most clicks on social media. Like, you outed yourself.
Yeah, it's those people that, to me, are smearing the name of someone doing something that is the closest thing we've really seen to Michael Jordan. Like, anytime you bring this name up, people scoff. People say, he's not even Kobe. He's so much better than Kobe Bryant. It's not even close. Like, I was there. I liked Kobe. I was a Laker fan because I was a Shaq loyalist. Like, Kobe was never this good. He never shot this efficiently. He never had this passing ability out of double team. Like, he's just... what we're watching is truly Jordan stuff. And I think the people that know basketball that are in the NBA, like a Tim Legler, recognize that. And so I'm totally with you. I hate that Shea is not getting his due and that so much of the oxygen is around something that really has no merit. There is no fact. The Thunder were 17th in free throws this year. They had the sixth most free throws among playoff teams. Like, it's just not... they get a horrible whistle is like the most infuriating part of this whole thing. It's like the Spurs get so many more calls than them, so many more foul calls. They're in the bonus so much quicker. And here we are, like the Thunder get blamed for it almost anytime the Spurs are even called for a foul. It's just, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills when I watch these Thunder broadcasts, but it doesn't matter. What matters is they're up 2-1 at a crucial game 4. I'm a little nervous with J-Dub out, with A.J. Mitchell out. I think they might have to go to Kenrich Williams, Aaron Wiggins off the bench. I'm kind of surprised they haven't played Kenrich more this series. I'd like to see him thrown at Wimby some. But they're certainly – their depth has been the difference so far, but that depth has been whittled down due to injury.
Yeah, no doubt. I've been saying it for a year. I think Shea will just end up beating the respect out of people. Like, when his career's done and the resume's built, that people won't have anything to say. He'll just beat the respect out of everybody. I'm nervous for tonight. Much less nervous than I would be down 2-1. That was a big win the other night. It feels like house money tonight. You come back 2-2. You feel all right. I still think there's a chance J-Dub plays in this series. I don't know about AJ. AJ was ruled out 36 hours in advance with a calf strain. AJ might be done until the finals or longer. And you're going to need these guys against the Knicks too, because my hot take, Carson, is that the Thunder are not currently playing the second-best team in the NBA. They're going to play the second-best team in the NBA in the next round, and the Knicks are going to give them more of a fight than the Spurs. The Spurs are young. The Spurs are immature. The Spurs – I mean, Stephon Castle, dude, you got fouled. Get over it. Get over it. Nobody punched him in the head. Nobody threw him into the stands. They're running 100 miles an hour. Yeah, you fell down. It was unbelievable. Like, they're soft. They're immature. They're buying into the officiating nonsense, and they're following their leader. Because, you know, Wimby wanted to come out all season talking about ethical basketball, and he's out here flopping around. The Thunder are in their heads. The Spurs are the third best team in the NBA. It's OKC. It's New York. It's San Antonio. I don't know if the Thunder win tonight or not. If they don't, I think they win at home game 5 and win either 6 or 7. The Thunder are going to win this series. I can't tell you how many games, but I hope they win tonight and just clean it up on Tuesday and let's be done with this thing. Let San Antonio get on to their offseason.
That'd be nice. I totally disagree. I think the Spurs are really like the second best team. If not, you know, I just think they don't have the depth come playoff time to survive. Their starters, good enough. They don't quite have the depth yet, but
I have crazy respect for the Knicks. I have mad respect for the Knicks.
See, I don't. I think playing in the East is like playing in Division II basketball.
I mean, they're winning by 30 a game, though, 10 in a row. It's just
– yeah.
I get it. Like, Oklahoma City, I think, will win in the finals, but I'm probably picking them in 7. I picked them in 5 against the Spurs. I'll probably pick them in 7 against the Knicks.
Yeah, like, you picked them in 5, and after game 1, I was like, oof. And yeah. Now it's back on the table, essentially. Now we'll have to obviously a lot left to go. But.
I was at game 1, Carson. I've left funerals where people were in better moods. It was brutal. Yeah, there's a Spurs fan sitting next to me.
Ones.
Spurs fan sitting next to me wanted to smoke. We had to have a little come to Jesus meeting and agree to both calm down a little bit. So
whoa.
Yeah, it was a little hostile off the jump. He was kind of taunting the section and chess sucks. Is SGA your MVP and all this? And and he was about my size. Carson, weight classes exist for a reason. If he was 6'2", 210, I probably wouldn't have said anything. He was about my exact size. So we had words and then we shook hands and agreed to both be cool all night and just cheer on our own teams and leave the extracurriculars. To other people.
You're
so,
a father now. You can't be getting in fights. You can't be getting in those fights that end up on like Twitter where guys are fighting in the stands, you know?
Oh, I know. Calmer heads prevailed. It was like the first 5 minutes of that game when they went on a run and the Caruso got Wimby a couple of times. And so it was his emotion. Then it was my emotion. And then there was like a 4-minute timeout where we actually just got to sit and like rest. And I mean, we were sitting closer than you and I's pictures are on this Zoom right now. Like we're touching. I'm like, we're sitting next to each other.
I was picturing him like in the row in front of you. He's beside you.
No. We were like arm to arm, packed in like sardines, touching shoulders. Like it was, I was like, we can, there cannot be this level of hostility for the next 3 hours. We need to have a conversation. And so we did. Yeah. And calmer heads prevailed.
Yeah. It's either we fight right now or we put bygones be bygones, and we watch the game. So both of us want to finish watching this game before we get in a brawl.
I've been
to that arena, by the way. I've been to the San Antonio's arena for a playoff game. It's the only thing that comes even remotely close.
Oh my
to,
gosh, we're almost
to
down. To
Thunder winning tonight, or you think? I hate when it's like house money. Let's just go back 2-2, because then you're in for, you know. You got injuries. Like, there's nothing's guaranteed. I'd prefer a win tonight. I'll pick the Thunder to win. How about that?
Oh man, I want to so badly. The Spurs are really good, man. I just feel like they've got to have some sort of answer for what Oklahoma City's done these last two games, just pushing Wimby out of the play and getting in their heads. I think that they'll have. I think calmer heads will prevail for the Spurs tonight. They might win tonight, but then I think the Thunder take the next two and get after it. So Thunder and six is probably where I would revise my prediction at this point.
Thunder got to change their starting lineup. You can't be getting down 15-0. I mean, I'm sorry.
AC? Starter?
Yes. Yes. Or Wallace. Like, if you still prefer Caruso to get in there with second unit, start Wallace. Just get... You got to mix it up because they're losing the first quarter every game this series. I think they may have tied one, but they've lost most. Last thing, PGA, the golf school goodbye. Oklahoma State Cowboys are heading to Nationals once again. The Cowgirls were third. Is that right, Colby? Were they third in their regional?
No. They're not third in their regional. They're third at Nationals.
That's what
Carson. They've got one more round. Oklahoma State women are the 21st ranked team in the country. They're behind only Stanford and USC right now in stroke play at Nationals, the number one and two teams in the country. They've got a great chance to make it. And if they do, I'll be locked in. Anything can happen in match play. So this could be a real Cinderella run for the women. They've got one more round of stroke play. I believe it's tomorrow. And then match play gets going on Tuesday. So, yeah. And then all of a sudden, you're three matches away from being national champions as the 21st ranked team in the country.
That's right. Really good job by Annie Young and company, for sure. The Cowboys, it was interesting that Preston Stout played on the PGA Tour at the PGA event, the Byron Nelson down there at the CJ Cup. I was really bullish on Preston. He missed the cut. I had him in a DraftKings lineup, and he had just a blow up hole or two a second round, and ended up missing the cut. But what a hectic schedule. We talked about the NIL hectic football visits and everything. But Preston Stout plays in the regional, then stops at the PGA for a couple rounds, and now he's back with the team for Nationals. Kind of a crazy week.
Yeah, no doubt. He shot 2 under on Thursday. I was like, all right, he's going to need a few more on Friday. The cut's always super low at this event. I think it was 6 under this year. And then 5 over on Friday was pretty brutal. 5 over on a really easy PGA Tour setup. But I'm sure he learned some lessons from that. And, I still trust him at Nationals. I just want Oklahoma State and Auburn. I really want the Oklahoma State-Auburn matchup. I really want Stout-Koivin. So that'll be next week. So that'll stroke play will start Friday. Friday through Monday, I believe, stroke play, and then Tuesday, Wednesday of next week, which will be into June for the match play out at the Omni La Costa in California as Oklahoma State men look to defend.
Yeah, it'll be really exciting. Obviously, I think Eric Lee may have taken top honors at the regional, if I remember right. He was at least OSU's top golfer, so they're young stud rounding into form, and who knows? I mean, there's a lot of golf to be played, but OSU's in a really prime position here. And I thought it was interesting, too. One last thing on Stout. Andy Johnson, again, from the Fried Egg Golf, he said someone on tour that he was talking to said that, you know, if Jackson Koivin wasn't around, like, everyone would be talking about Stout as the next guy coming on. But he said this guy has watched both a lot and said that he thinks Stout is actually better than Jackson Koivin. So will be interesting to see how their careers play out, but I'm with you. Like, bring me Auburn, bring me Stout Koivin just for the fireworks, and we'll see. It'll be a fun week next week.
Yeah, absolutely would. The Golf School Goodbye is brought to you by Echo Contracting. Echo Contracting is a proud sponsor of the pod, offering electrical contracting services throughout all of Oklahoma. They pride themselves on high-quality professional jobs done right the first time. Call or text for a quote today, 405-279-8444, or email info@echo-contracting.com. Echo Contracting, Echo Contracting, Echo Contracting. Can't wait for that. Zach Boshue, by the way, I need to look. I wanted to give him his flowers. Yeah. Let me see where he's at on Sunday. He was in the third to last group. You know, Boshue, he was the three bag, I believe, on that team in 2018 that won the national championship. And he was just a grinder for a long time on the Corn Ferry Tour. Got his card this year, third to last group. He's 4 under today. He's T5 currently with 6 holes to go. He's 5 shots off of Siwoo's lead. It's going to be a really strong finish for Boshue, and he's playing well today. So happy to see him doing so well. He still lives in the area, which I only know because several months ago we were at gymnastics, and I looked across the room. There's this guy with his daughter. She looks like she's probably 2 years old. I'm like, he looks so familiar. I sat there and racked my brain for a while, and I was like, That's Zach Boshu. So yeah, he's an Oklahoma State guy through and through, and really happy to see just an absolute grinder who spent the better part of a decade to get to this position, go out and have a good showing this week on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, I mean, he was a huge part of that national championship team. Like you mentioned, he was the three bag. He wasn't like he was the last guy in the lineup. And he's really struggled. I do wonder if that missed putt when they lost to Texas the year after that messed with him mentally, because he kind of fell into a bit of a slump. I wasn't sure he'd ever make it to the PGA Tour. He kind of, like you mentioned, had been kind of just grinding on the lower mini tours, and really happy for him. He does live out at Oak Tree. He's part of the new generation of Oak Tree gang over there, and really cool to see, because it's always good to see an OSU guy have success on the PGA Tour. But he, from all accounts, he's like one of the more well-liked guys from that team. He's still friends with Hovland and all those guys, still really talk and speak about him fondly now that he's kind of back on the tour scene. So really happy for Zach Boshu. That's a tremendous story of perseverance for sure. So
yeah,
I appreciate Echo sponsoring the pod as always. And Colby, I hope you and Layla thunder it up tonight. And hopefully we move past the Spurs quicker than expected. Hopefully your original prediction is true.
I hope so. I hope we take care of them tonight. I think we're going to go swimming this afternoon. Layla, you want to go swimming?
Yes, I do.
Have fun, all you guys. Right. Have a good Memorial Day weekend.
Good stuff, Carson. Happy Memorial Day to everyone. Everyone have a great week. Thanks for watching and listening. As always, go Pokes! Yeah.